So three strikes laws take discretion away from the courts and place defendants in categories that for some there is no escape. But there are other ways in which the government can place a black mark on the public or even not so public records of citizens. Take the U.S. terror watch list. It contains at the very least 700,000 people. The government doesn't reveal who they are or why they've been marked as potential threats, but being on such a list can have serious consequences. Joining us now to explain is Anya Bernstein, associate professor at the SUNY Buffalo Law School, author of the article, The Hidden Costs of Terrorists' Watch Lists. Anya Bernstein, welcome.
Thanks.
So how do you get on a list? I mean, I think of false positives in drug tests, so you ate a poppy seed bagel or something like that. There are rational explanations, but if somebody told me they were on a watch list, I think I'd be inclined to be suspicious.
Well, you'd hope that that would be the case because we like to assume that our law enforcement agencies are doing a really good job. The unfortunate thing about the terrorist watch list situation is that we have no indication that they ever check the accuracy of their predictions. So they're making predictions about people's likelihood of engaging in terrorist acts, but there's no retrospective review. So you can get on a watch list by being suspicious to somebody, but you can't get off.
And is there any due process here? Is there any sort of FISA court that would determine whether you're on a list or supposed to be on a list? Is there a Freedom of Information Act challenge that you can make or even to disclose if you're on a list?
No. If you ask the government if you are on a list, they will tell you we can neither confirm nor deny your presence on a list. And they will do that all the way up through the federal courts. There's a case on the no-fly list that is at trial now, and the government refuses to disclose whether the person is on the no-fly list or not. There is no neutral arbiter determining whether you should be on the list. It's completely agency internal. It's all law enforcement.
And the list exploded. I think it peaked at over a million, and it was after the shoe bomber case in Christmas of, I believe, 2009. But what has happened to increase the size of the list? And does it really only apply to flying? I mean, if you're on a watch list, does it affect other aspects of your life other than when you want to get on an airliner?
Absolutely. The no-fly list is the most visible of the lists because you're prohibited from flying. So you have a pretty good idea that you're on that one. But there's actually tens of other subordinate lists that are collected by the Terrorism Screening Center, managed by various law enforcement and immigration agencies. And just to give you an idea of how bloated these things may be, in 2006, there were 71,000 names on the no-fly list. The Department of Justice criticized the Terrorist Screening Center for poor evaluation of its records. And within a year, the Terrorist Screening Center had cut that down from 71,000 to 34,000. So they themselves decided that half those people shouldn't be on that list.
But they wouldn't have done anything unless DOJ had asked them to.
Exactly. And that DOJ report was an inspector general report, which are wonderful and often very thorough reports, but they're sporadic. And they pay attention to whatever they think they should be paying attention to. There's no regular review of the size of the list, the names on the list, or even the criteria by which the lists are compiled.
And there's no way a plaintiff could compel this or a class action lawsuit could compel this. It really was only DOJ that made this change.
Correct. If you try to challenge your inclusion in the list, basically the agencies involved have exempted themselves from all the statutory requirements to give you information about whether you're on the list and to allow you to contest that information. They've even exempted themselves from the statutory requirement that the information be accurate and that it be relevant to some government purpose.
Now, if you're a prosecutor and you go before a grand jury looking to indict somebody for suspicious behavior related to some terrorist investigation, if you say they're on a watch list, does anyone challenge that? Does anybody go, oh, well, that means nothing? Or, well, what kind of watch list? Or is just being on a watch list another strike against you?
Well, at this point, I think people just don't have enough information about how these watch lists are compiled to have a basis for challenge. All you know is that the person is on a watch list. So, for instance, there's a case a few years ago where somebody was arrested and he was on a watch list And the judge, he challenged his arrest, and the judge said, well, being on the watch list in itself is not reason for arrest, but it's fine if that is part of the probable cause inquiry that the police officer makes. The police officer is allowed to take that into account as part of everything he knows about the person. So yeah, it counts as a strike against you, and the people enforcing the watch list don't have any way to challenge the accuracy of the listing or the criteria to begin with.
Is there any way to assess what population, what groups of people are disproportionately affected by these kinds of watch lists in the course of their day-to-day lives or their travels?
Well, we don't have any broad information about that, but every once in a while, something leaks out. So, for instance, a few years ago in Denver, the police compiled lists of people involved in various political activities, and that list made its way to one of the terrorism lists run by the FBI. And that included people like members of the National Rifle Association and Quaker peace activists.
So if you're someone who's declared bankruptcy and maybe defaulted on, you know, $50,000 worth of loans or even a mortgage, it's easier to restore your credit rating than it is to get yourself off a government watch list, based on what you're telling me, it seems like.
Well, absolutely. At least you know that you've been bankrupt and you know that you've defaulted. In the terrorist watch list case, you don't even know you're there. How can you clear your name?
And there's no process for doing so, or does DOJ want eventually there to be some kind of process?
The only process there is now is for the no-fly list to ask the agency to review their information on you. There's no process for challenging inclusion on the no-fly list, and there's absolutely no process for any of the subordinate lists that the Terrorism Screening Center maintains.
Anya Bernstein is associate professor at the SUNY Buffalo Law School and author of the article, The Hidden Costs of Terrorist Watch Lists. They don't sound so hidden after that conversation. Anya, thanks so much.
Thank you.